perdías el tiempo sobre la almohada. Y te escribía sana mil horas en tu mirada. Y te escribía no existía la vida. Y te escribía. Y te escribía.
step off the train, walking down your street again, past your door, but you don't live there anymore. It's years since you've been there, and now you disappear somewhere. I got a space to find some better place, and I miss you. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back. gerne stressen lässt. Ich lese nicht viel, nur Mopo und SMS. Und tut mir leid, ich hab es eilig. Beats, Raps, Label, ich fahr mehrgleisig. Der mit den Segel und dem Rhymebook voller Eselzorn, dessen Text euch warnen sollen wie ein Nebelhorn. Bin der Bescheidwisser, auch der kleine Schisser, der volle Leuten mit großen Freuden als Beinpisser. Der ohne Goldketten, der stets in Bewegung bleibt wie Rolltreppen. Der Kopf, der denkt, ne Schnauze wie Rap. Mein Herz, das schlägt, die Plauze ist fett. Ich hörst auf, wenn ich mir einen auf deine Mutter keule. Bis dann gibt es Eigenlob, da stinkt die Buttersäure. Mucke und Rap, der Typ, der beides kann. Flash ich der Pizza, wie mehr ich sei nur der zweite Mann.
Wer bist du?
Oh, easy einfällt, kein Chicky Zweifel.
Machen Rap und die Musik lieben.
Wer bist du?
Die go o auf den Sieben.
Wer bist du?
Der mit dem Gro-P, der geil G, der geil H, denn yo, Dosi. Der Anti-Veganer, der mit Eis statt Yogi-Tee, der verplante Routinier, der abhängte Mobile. Der kleine Junge, der Papa, der nette Kieskram. Alles wächst und gedeiht ohne Blumenbeet und Gießkan. Faul und spät, ehrlich wie Kinder. Der Beginner, der sein Ohren traut wie ein Blinder.
Der, der so nörgelt und quiekelt. Der, der sich vor Regeln und Verträgen ekelt. Der, der sich aufs Rad schwingt, die Nase hin in Fahrt zwingt. Und aus den Kopfhörern kommt Eric B. und Joachim. Einer, der most hated, wo ich aber drüber stehe. Ich werd euch weiterhin überleben, weil ich überlege. Der, der ist vom Tellerwäscher, ich hab den zum Standard-Rapper. Der wollte Selfmade-Kicken, den ich die Welt zu füßen.
Wer bist du, ey?
Ja, mit viel Herz und bisschen Intelligenz. Take a deep dive.
Wer bist du?
Dan Yo.
Für mich ist Rap noch nicht am Ende.
Wer bist du?
ID1. Ich komm von Heinzbusch, da steht auf dem Gürtel, den ich trag. Ich wirbel durch die Charts und zwirble mir am Bart. Hab über 20 verschiedene Namen auf meinem Briefkopf. Und wenn ich über Beats rock, bring ich Classics wie Reebok. Doch ich bin süchtig nach der Scheiße mit dem Swoosh. Und meine Cap leg ich nur ab, wenn ich dusch. Steh halt auf Rap-Mode und bin ein Gag-Vogel. Und meine Styles sind wie Finger in die Steckdose.
Wer bist du?
Ich will den Markt retten. Mein Rezept zum Erfolg ist geheim wie Ratsäcken.
Ständig auf der Suche, wie bei Yahoo und Google. Nur dafür, dass der Scheiß aus dumm auf die Bowlingkugel.
Na
der, der gern dort chillt, wo's laut
ist.
Na der, der am Sampler sitzt wie ein Autist. Der Einzelgänger, der Tierplayer, der Weltkenner. Der Platten sammeln mit gerne Kammer, der Selbstgänger. Die Musik lieben.
Wer bist du?
Die go o auf den Sieben.
Wer bist du?
I don't know what your name is.
Du weißt es nicht.
I know.
Bist du verrückt?
Hier ist Matt.
And that's my name.
DJ.
Welcome to another deep dive. This one's going to be about art.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's about art and current events. Yeah. It's for people who like both of those things.
Gotcha.
And this is one where we're eavesdropping on a debate between two artists.
Okay.
And it's about an art project that tackles the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Wow.
In a very provocative way.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
So the two artists are named Hero Workman
and
Andreas Maria Jacobs.
Great.
Workman is the artist behind the Kienkampf Gallery,
and
he calls himself a working class hero.
Right.
And he reached out to Jacobs with an idea for a project.
Right.
And the idea is a digital art exhibition centered around the phrase New Auschwitz.
Oh, wow. Okay, so right away we're in a very charged space.
Yeah.
Right? Using New Auschwitz.
Right.
Immediately invokes one of history's, like, darkest chapters.
Right.
Like, just the weight of that term.
Right.
So the question becomes, like, what is the intended impact of using that comparison?
Right.
And then also, what are the potential consequences? Because, you know, you can't just throw that phrase around lightly, it seems like.
Yeah, and I mean, Workman, in his initial email to Jacobs, doesn't mince words.
Okay.
He really, like, lays it all out there.
Okay.
And he sees the situation in Gaza, especially after the October 7th attacks, as a reflection of the horrors inflicted by the Nazis.
Wow.
the suffering, the global community's response. He sees direct parallels.
Yeah. And this is where, you know, the idea of Holocaust inversion comes in.
Okay.
Which is, you know, a perspective that argues that directly equating Israeli policies with the actions of the Nazis is itself a form of anti-Semitism. Right. This conversation really highlights how sensitive and potentially fraught these comparisons are.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is a really difficult conversation to have.
Yeah.
But it's important, I think, to have these kinds of conversations.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, Jacobs pushes back hard.
Okay.
He's not afraid to disagree.
Okay.
And he doesn't hold back.
Okay.
He pulls you into this whirlwind tour of historical atrocities.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The Rwandan genocide, the Syrian civil war.
Yeah.
And he's building this case that while the situation in Gaza is obviously tragic,
right,
he says that it differs fundamentally from the Holocaust in its scale and systematic nature.
He's drawing a line in the sand, it seems like.
He is.
Yeah.
Now, Workman doubles down.
Okay.
And clarifies that he's not saying the two situations are identical.
Yeah.
He's arguing that using New Auschwitz is about conveying the intensity of the suffering in Gaza.
Okay.
He wants to break through what he sees as the limitations of mainstream media and their narratives.
So this is a critical distinction.
Yeah.
Because it gets to the heart of artistic license and responsibility.
Right.
Right. Can art, even with the best intentions, be a force for change without diminishing or trivializing historical atrocities?
Yeah.
It's a tightrope walk.
It is. And that's kind of where Jacobs lands, is can a title as provocative as that overshadow the message?
Yeah.
And he seems to think it might.
He's skeptical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is.
And understandably so.
Yeah. And, you know, he questions whether art alone
right.
can make a dent.
Yeah.
These deeply rooted political and economic systems at play in this conflict.
Yeah, he seems to be advocating for a deeper understanding of the root causes, you know, what's going on behind the scenes, rather than just commenting on the suffering.
Right. He wants action, not just commentary.
Exactly.
And to illustrate that point, he suggests that Workman connect with Rob Schrama, who's an artist known for his nuanced and informed work on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
So he's saying, look, if you're going to tackle this sensitive topic,
yeah,
you need a more nuanced and informed approach.
Right.
This might need a much larger canvas than a single art project.
And this back and forth between them, I think, throws a really tough question at us as the audience.
Yeah.
Can art really be a force for change in the real world?
It's a big question.
Or are we just admiring a message on a canvas while atrocities continue?
Right. Are we just passively observing this?
Right.
It's a powerful image. And it makes you think about that question, like, does anything really change?
Right. Like, are we even capable of changing?
Exactly.
And it's interesting because Workman talks about how focusing on the optics of the conflict, you know, the way it's often framed in the media might actually be perpetuating the cycle of suffering.
Oh, interesting.
He wants to push past the headlines and grapple with that raw human element.
Yeah, like get to the heart of it.
Yeah, and he says it's not about taking sides.
Okay.
It's about recognizing our shared capacity for suffering.
Our shared humanity.
Exactly. And this is where the conversation, I think, takes a fascinating turn.
Okay.
Because Jacobs, while he is skeptical of the New Auschwitz concept,
right,
he seems to agree with Workman on a fundamental level.
On that human element.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. He acknowledges that deep-seated human capacity for inflicting pain,
yeah,
and the role of media desensitization.
Right, because we see so much suffering in the media all the time.
All the time.
That it's easy to become numb to it.
And he admits that even he would rather focus on his own spiritual evolution than dwell on the horrors of the world.
I mean, haven't we all been there?
Oh, absolutely.
Right. It's so much easier to just turn away.
It's a very human response
yeah.
to want to shield ourselves from pain.
Absolutely.
From that overwhelming weight of the world's suffering.
And so that's, I think, Workman's challenge, and maybe the challenge of art in general.
Okay.
Is to kind of shake us out of that complacency, to make us feel something, even if it's uncomfortable. So that we're moved to act.
Right. And Jacobs, being a bit more pragmatic,
yes,
sees the limits of this approach.
Okay.
He brings up Picasso's Guernica.
Oh, wow.
That iconic anti-war painting.
Yeah.
Almost as a counterpoint.
It's a brilliant comparison.
Yeah.
Because it makes you think, did Guernica actually stop the violence that it depicts?
Right.
Did it prevent future atrocities?
Right.
Or is it more accurate to say that it serves as a stark reminder?
Okay.
A testament to the horrors of war that we can't afford to ignore.
So are we supposed to just throw our hands up and say, well, art can't change anything, so what's the point?
Right, like, why bother?
Yeah.
I think that's where this conversation pushes us beyond a simple answer.
Okay.
It's not about finding solutions within the canvas.
Okay.
Or the sculpture itself.
Okay.
It's about what happens after we encounter the art.
Okay.
Does it spark a conversation? Does it change how we see the world, even slightly?
Yeah.
Does it make us think about things we'd rather ignore?
Right.
Those are the questions.
And Workman seems to think that art can do all of that.
Okay.
And he keeps circling back to the idea that it can force self-reflection,
mm-hmm.
both individually and collectively.
Okay.
He talks about recognizing suffering as a universal problem.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, something inherent to the human experience.
That's powerful because it transcends political boundaries.
Yeah.
Religious differences, all those things that tend to divide us.
Right.
It goes straight to the heart of our shared humanity.
But Jacobs remains unconvinced.
Okay.
Particularly about the effectiveness of this specific art project.
He's still hung up on the new Auschwitz.
It seems like it. Yeah. He sees it as workmen making a statement, shouting about the horrors of the situation,
okay.
rather than offering a tangible way forward.
So he's concerned about the potential for further polarization.
Right.
For deepening the divides that Workman claims he wants to bridge.
But Workman pushes back on that.
Okay.
And he says, look, I'm not trying to offer easy answers here.
Okay.
He's more interested in stirring something within the viewer.
Okay.
Prompting them to grapple with these complex emotions and questions on their own terms.
So leaving it open-ended?
Yes.
Okay.
He wants to leave us with that final lingering question.
Which is?
New Auschwitz. Does anything really change, or are we unwilling or unable to change it?
It's a question without an easy answer.
For sure.
But it's one we all have to wrestle with, both individually and as a global community.
It's a big one. And what do you think? Can art be a force for change in the real world? You know, it's interesting. What makes this whole thing so fascinating is that they're both willing to, like, ask these hard questions, and they push each other to really think critically about the role of art in a world that's, you know, overflowing with information, with suffering, that often feels too vast to even comprehend.
And what I think is really refreshing is that they're not afraid to disagree.
Totally.
Like, they're not trying to come to this, like, neat little resolution or a single right answer.
Right.
It's like they're modeling this kind of intellectual honesty that you don't really see a lot these days.
It feels very authentic.
Yeah, totally.
And I think you can feel the respect underneath it all, even when they're challenging each other's ideas pretty intensely.
Which I think speaks volumes. It suggests that you can have these conversations about really complex, even contentious topics without, like, resorting to personal attacks or shutting down the conversation.
Right.
Just because you disagree doesn't mean you can't have a conversation.
Right. And so it's like, where does this all leave us?
Yeah.
Workman seems to still really believe in this idea of New Auschwitz as a catalyst for change.
He's committed to the idea.
Yeah.
It seems like.
He's really committed.
Oh.
He sees it as, like, this necessary provocation.
Okay.
A way to jolt people out of their complacency mm-hmm. and force them to confront the brutal realities of this conflict.
Yeah.
And just more broadly, like, the human capacity for inflicting suffering.
He doesn't want us to look away.
He does not.
Okay.
But I keep coming back to Jacobs's point that art alone might not be enough. Like, we need to look deeper, right?
Yeah.
We need to address the political and economic systems that allow these cycles of violence to continue.
That's a really important takeaway, I think, from this whole conversation.
Absolutely.
It's a reminder that while art is powerful,
uh-huh.
and, you know, in raising awareness and getting us to reflect,
sure.
it's not a magic solution.
Right.
It can't just, like, dismantle these huge power structures uh-huh. or resolve deeply entrenched conflicts overnight.
So it's not an either thing, right?
Exactly.
It's about recognizing how interconnected these different things are and finding ways to work within them to create change.
I think that's a really good point. Like, it's about understanding how art, politics, economics, how they all kind of play into each other.
Yeah, and recognizing we all have a role to play.
Absolutely.
Even if they look different.
And maybe that's a good place to kind of wrap up this conversation.
Yeah, this has been a really thought-provoking deep dive.
Yeah.
And I think it really speaks to the responsibility we all share to engage with the world in a thoughtful, compassionate, and impactful way.
Yeah. And not shy away from the hard questions.
Absolutely.
Even when they make us uncomfortable.
Exactly. And I think that's what's so great about these deep dives is that
wow.
we're left not with easy answers,
right,
but with deeper questions.
Yeah.
And with a desire to kind of like go out and learn more and do more.
And that's a powerful place to be.
It is.
Because it's in that space of questioning and seeking that real change, I think, becomes possible.
I totally agree.
I hated it.
I mean, hey, kijk, there's the captain of the Pirate Museum.
Hi, Hans. How are you?
Oh, my God. You are, yeah, great. You,
yeah.
Yeah, you look great, too.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm having a good day.
Yeah, so far it's all good.
Yeah, I've been involved with the building up of the Wilhelm Portal.
Ah, oh, nice.
I'm helping the guys to make a nice environment there.
Nice.
And, yeah.
I love the Wilhelm Portal. It's such a beautiful environment.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really, really invites you to be creative.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I just finished to put up some light for tonight. And now I'm going to have a little walk in the village. Yeah.
Hey, but now there is in the Wilhelm Portal, there is a guy...
reading a book.
Reading a book.
Yeah, book reading at the moment, the program. Yeah. Seven
but
people.
So this means that there's a guy on the stage sitting there reading a book and everybody's watching him, or how does that work?
Everybody's sitting, relaxing in the different level stage we just finished yesterday. And,
but is he making sound when he's reading, or is he just reading?
He's just reading a book at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. And everybody's just watching him sitting on the stage?
No, they wander around and listening to the story. Yeah.
Oh, they are listening. They can hear in his head.
In his head, from the speakers.
Yeah. Oh, really? Ah, there's a mic and everything.
Yeah,
ah, I thought he was just sitting there reading. And,
it's a stage reading.
To find his waves or, I don't know.
Yeah,
okay. So it's a bit
more simple than that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just the beginning. It's the first item happening.
Yeah, exactly.
Together
they're warming
with
up.
Some water thing.
I don't know yet.
So,
but
at one, we all really need to be next to the church.
Yeah.
1 o'clock is very important.
Okay.
There's one guy who's going to perform the opening on two stages.
Okay. Let's see that.
Yeah, I have no idea what to expect. So
let's check it out.
It's going to be, it's Aya, so it's going to be like a spectacular thing.
Yeah.
He's very good at opening ceremonies.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, then I'll see you later. I continue with my work.
Thank you. Hey, but how is the pirate... the wind. Okay. How is the Pirate Museum going? Because I'm curious.
The Pirate Museum, this winter I managed to finish two new stories and I'm making the illustrations.
New
and
story.
Then I'm going to bring it here to Rakhort for lingerie. It's going to sitting on the hill.
Yeah,
so
congratulations. This
thank
is
you.
So beautiful.
It's coming
wow.
here in town and wow. going to be open for the summer.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so, nice. Yeah. That's nice because the Pirate Museum, it was such a beautiful thing, you know, this opening.
In Mosplein. Yeah, it was quite a new neighborhood event.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's also great because I lost all the pictures because I was shooting pictures at the time also.
Yeah.
But I stopped doing that. After I lost them, I stopped.
Okay. But if you ever need some picture, I have beautiful pictures.
Yeah, well, anyone can send me something, you know, because I don't do like this social media shit, so I have no idea what's out there.
Okie dokie. We'll see each other.
Yeah. See you later, man.
Ciao.
Yeah. Nou, dat was, weet je ook alweer? God, ja, de Italiaanse gast. Die ken ik al heel lang. Die was opeens directeur van het Piratenmuseum, PIMA. En dat was een grandioze opening. Een optocht in Noord van de ruimte naar... het pleintje voor de bibliotheek. Nou, nu lopen we even rond.
Is voorbij, maar die huiswerk wordt toch nog rijk.
18 slaps of me.
Children on the Highway. I heard the wagons rolling past the garden fence. Sometimes I also glimpsed them through the faintly stirring gaps in the foliage. How loudly the wood in their spokes and shafts groaned in the hot summer. Farmhands were coming from the fields, laughing outrageously. I sat on our small swing, just relaxing among the trees in my parents' garden. Beyond the fence, the bustle never stopped. Children ran by in the space of a moment. Grain wagons, with men and women on the sheaves or around them, darkened the flower beds. Toward evening, I saw a leisurely strolling gentleman with a cane, and a couple of girls, coming toward him arm in arm, stepped aside into the grass as they greeted him. Then birds soared up in a sparkling spray. I followed them with my eyes, saw them rising for an instant until I believed that they were no longer rising, but that I was falling, and clutching the ropes because I felt faint, I began to swing a little. Soon I was swinging harder as cooler air began to waft and trembling stars appeared overhead instead of the soaring birds. I was served my supper by candlelight. Often both my arms lay on the wooden tabletop. and I was already weary as I bit into my bread and butter. The large meshed curtains bellied in the warm wind, and at times some passerby held them apart with his hands if he wanted to see me more clearly and talk to me. Usually the candle soon went out, and the gathered midges flitted about for a while in the dark candle fumes. If anyone at the window asked me something, I would gaze at him as if peering at the mountains or simply into the air, and he likewise didn't much care whether I answered. But if anyone then vaulted over the windowsill and announced that the others were already in front of the house, I would stand up, sighing, of course. "Goodness, why are you sighing? What has happened? Is it some special misfortune that can never be made good again? Will we never be able to recover? Is everything truly lost?" Nothing was lost. We ran to the front of the house. "Thank goodness you're finally here." "Well, you're always late." "What do you mean I'm always late?" "You more than anyone else. Stay home if you don't want to join us." "No mercy." "What? No mercy? What are you saying?" We poked our heads into the evening. There was no daytime and no nighttime. At times our vest buttons were grinding together like teeth. At times we kept a steady gap between us as we ran, with fire in our mouths like beasts in the tropics. Like cuirassiers in ancient wars, stamping and leaping high in the air, we drove one another down the short street, and then, with this urging in our legs, into the highway. A few stray people ran into the ditch. No sooner had they melted into the dark embankment than they were already standing on the dirt road like outsiders and peering down. "Come on down! Come on up first! So you can throw us down? Not on your life. We're not that stupid." "You mean you're that cowardly. Come on now, come up." "Really? You? You of all people are going to throw us down? Says who?" We mounted the attack, were sent sprawling, and collapsed on the grass in the road ditch, falling of our own free will. Everything was evenly warmed. We felt no heat, no cold in the grass. We only grew tired. When you turned on your right side, with your hand under your ear, you felt very much like dozing off. You did want to pull yourself up, raising your chin, but only to tumble into a deeper ditch. Then, holding your arm out crosswise and flapping your legs to the side, you wanted to throw yourself against the air and be certain to tumble into an even deeper ditch, and you never wanted to stop. You hardly thought about how you might properly stretch out your body, especially your knees, as far as possible, to sleep in the final ditch, and on the verge of weeping, you lay on your back as if ill. People winked whenever a boy, his elbows at his hips, leaped over us with dark soles from the embankment to the road. The moon could already be seen fairly high. A mail wagon drove past in its light. A mild breeze arose all about. You could feel it even in the ditch, and the nearby woods began to rustle. You were no longer so anxious to be alone. "Where are you?" "Come here. All of us together." "Why are you hiding? Stop your nonsense." "Don't you realize that the mail wagon has already passed?" "Oh, no, already passed?" "Of course, it passed by while you were asleep." "I was asleep? Imagine that." "Shush, one can tell just by looking at you." "Oh, go on. Come." We ran closer together. Some of us held hands. We couldn't keep our heads high enough because the road descended. Someone let out an Indian war whoop. A gallop shot into our legs as never before. Whenever we leaped, the wind would lift us by our hips. Nothing could have stopped us. We were running so hard that even when passing one another, we managed to fold our arms and calmly look around. We halted at the bridge spanning the mountain torrent. Those who had run further doubled back. The water below smashed against rocks and roots as if it were not already late in the evening. There was no reason why no one jumped up to the balustrade of the bridge. In the distance, a railroad train emerged from behind some shrubbery. All the compartments were lit. The glass windows were probably down. One of us began singing a popular hit, but we all wanted to sing. We sang much faster than the train moved. We swung our arms because our voices weren't strong enough. Our voices formed a scrimmage in which we felt cozy. If you blend your voice with other voices, you are virtually caught on a fishhook. And so, with our backs to the forest, we sang for the ears of the distant travelers. The adults were still awake in the village. The mothers were making up the beds for the night. It was already time. I kissed the one standing next to me, casually shook hands with the three nearest ones, and began to run back. No one called out to me. At the first crossroads, where they could no longer see me, I turned off and ran back into the forest along dirt roads. I was heading toward the southern city which our villagers talk about. There are people there. Just imagine, they don't sleep. And why not? Because they don't get sleepy. And why not? Because they're fools. Don't fools get sleepy? How could fools get sleepy? Exposing a city slicker. Finally, around 10 at night, together with a man whom I had once known only casually, and who had unexpectedly joined me this time, dragging me around the streets for 2 hours, I arrived at the elegant mansion where I had been invited to a soiree. "Well," I said, clapping my hands as a sign that it was absolutely necessary to say good night. I had already made a few less pointed attempts. By now I was quite exhausted. "Are you going right up?" he asked. From his mouth, I heard a sound like clicking teeth. "Yes." I did have an invitation. I had told him so immediately. Indeed, I had been invited to go upstairs to a place where I would love to be, and not down here, standing outside the front door and gazing past my interlocutor's ears. Or now going mute with him as if we were determined to linger on this spot for a long time. The houses all around us promptly took part in this silence, as did the darkness above them all the way up to the stars. And the footfalls of invisible strollers whose routes one did not care to guess. The wind which kept hugging the opposite side of the street. A gramophone which sang against the closed windows of some room or other. They sounded from this silence as if it had always been and would forever remain their property. My companion resigned himself on his behalf and also, after a smile, on my behalf, stretched his right arm upward along the wall and, closing his eyes, leaned his face against it. But I did not wait until this smile faded, for embarrassment suddenly whirled me around. This was the smile that had first made me realize he was a city slicker.